The following program comes to you as part of the Africa Health Network, a service of the Voice of America to our audience throughout the African continent.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Lina Ormudu, and welcome to Health Chat. There are some good news when it comes to Ebola. The World Health Organization says Guinea and Sierra Leone each recorded a single case of Ebola in the past week, putting a year-end goal of ending the deadly epidemic within reach. However, WHO warns some risks remain. In another positive development, preliminary results on the efficacy of an Ebola vaccine in Guinea suggested the vaccine was 100% effective at protecting against Ebola. We will discuss the new vaccine and other news and developments on Ebola with Voice of America's reporters who have been covering the story. Joining us in the studio is Voice of America's Mariama Diarro-Crandall and Carol Pearson. Mariama, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
And Carol, thank you so much for joining us.
Nice to be here.
And let me remind our listeners that you are listening to Health Chat. If you have any questions, you can call us at 202-619-3111. The U.S. country code is 1. So as I mentioned earlier, at last, there is a way to end the suffering from the Ebola epidemic that has ravaged West Africa for more than a year. Researchers say the vaccine is so effective, there may never be a major outbreak of Ebola again. And here is VOA's Carol Pearson reporting.
The Ebola outbreak that swept through West Africa claimed more than 11,000 lives. Children, mothers, fathers, doctors, and nurses. No one was safe. The epidemic was so horrifying that countries around the world finally rallied in sending help, building treatment units, training medical staff, and helping governments work toward ending the epidemic. Rival pharmaceutical companies work together to produce a vaccine, and at last there is one, produced in record time and said to be highly effective. Dr. Junge Arne Rutingen is one of the study co-authors at the Norwegian Institute of Public Health.
Based on the number of individuals and cases we see, there is 100% protection in those vaccinated.
The vaccine combines a protein of the strain of Ebola that ravaged West Africa and another unrelated virus. The result is a weakened virus that cannot cause disease but generates an immune response. Health workers and others at high risk were the first to get vaccinated, along with thousands of volunteers.
What we did was to follow the epidemic in a way. We identified contacts of new cases and also contacts of their contacts, and therefore had identified a cluster or a ring of high-risk individuals. And those were the ones who were enrolled in the study.
No placebo was used because the virus is so deadly and the researchers wanted to save as many lives as possible. Producing the vaccine and conducting the study was an international effort involving Doctors Without Borders and the World Health Organization in Guinea. The Norwegian Institute of Public Health designed the study, and Merck produced the vaccine. There is still no licensed vaccine against Ebola. The licensing process is time-consuming. But the plan is to keep the study going until there are no more cases of Ebola in West Africa. Researchers estimate the epidemic will finally be over in a few months. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
Great story, Carol, about the vaccine. Very, very hopeful. So tell us, what do they say? What do researchers say? They say 100% effective? Is this even possible?
Well, I asked them that, and it is the way they calculated it, it's 100% effective. There were more than 10,000 people who were vaccinated. When you count all the people who received the vaccine, both in the clinical studies and on the ground in Liberia and in Guinea. And of all of the people who were vaccinated in Guinea, which was more than 4,000, there were about 3 who actually had the virus. So, and they could have had the virus before they got the vaccine. The vaccine is effective in 10 days.
Okay. Okay, that's very important. And we would have more on the vaccine, and you'll tell us some of the people that you've discussed this with, and what are some of the other information that are available on this, because it's a very it's groundbreaking, really. Now, Mariama, you just returned from West Africa, where you were able to visit countries like Guinea-Bissau that borders Guinea, where the Ebola outbreak started. So what were you able to see when you were in Guinea-Bissau in terms of the way they feel about the outbreak being so close to the country?
Well, for Guinea, I actually asked the question, knowing the long border that they share for Guinea-Bissau, knowing the long border they share with the Guinea-Conakry, it's almost like a miracle that they haven't had Ebola. And I think I interviewed what they call the National Institute of Health, the head of that. I call them the Ebola czars, because they're the ones who take care of it. Yeah. And he actually joked and said maybe just God has been Guineans since the Ebola outbreak basically started. I was actually impressed because they had a very strong public awareness campaign, because I spoke to a few people, just, you know, the regular men on the street, about what their thoughts was about Ebola. And most of them were like, you know, well, we're watching TV. We know we have to wash our hands, you know, before we do this and that. Yeah. And the other person was like, well, we are a small country and we know the devastating effects an Ebola outbreak will have in Guinea-Bissau. So I think they've been very lucky, but at the same time, on the practical way, on the practical side, you know, I visited the hospitals and things like that. They seem to be prepared.
Prepared. And preparedness is definitely the subject of
Absolutely.
Your package that we will listen to. So this is Mariama Diallo reporting on Guinea-Bissau's preparedness.
Guinea-Bissau has never had a case of Ebola, but it's on people's minds.
Ebola is very dangerous, and we don't want it reaching us. We are small, and getting Ebola will devastate the country.
Before eating, we should wash our hands with soap to prevent Ebola.
Placido Cardoso credits a public awareness campaign, but he says international assistance from organizations like U.S.-based Centers for Disease Control has been key.
And then the work has been done also at the level of the health workers, training them, build their capacity on the prevention, sensitization at community level.
The Simão Mendes Hospital now has an Ebola ward tucked in the back of the facility.
When you arrive here, you clean your feet. Don't bring anything inside.
Ebola prevention hinges in monitoring. The country is particularly vulnerable, sharing a long border with Guinea, where the first Ebola case was identified in December 2013. The Ebola unit has two Sierra Leoneans under observation after they illegally entered the country. Elizabeth Lorne-Dipwo says the task is challenging.
Then when you go at the border, you realize actually there isn't any border. The borders are administrative. You don't really make the difference between Borutuma and the village on the other side of the border. The people just cross from one village to the other.
The World Health Organization ranks Guinea-Bissau 176 out of 190 in national health care. Dr. Faustino Gomez Correa says the realities of his country make an Ebola outbreak difficult to imagine.
Because of our culture, logistical problems, structural and conjunctural problems the country has at this moment, it's very difficult to deal with any kind of epidemic.
The National Institute of Public Health echoes the same concerns, but says it has trained hundreds of health workers, and also 100 people have been trained in contact tracing.
Here is the laboratory.
The Portuguese government has also set up a mobile lab.
Here, please.
Operational since March, it's equipped with everything necessary to handle Ebola, including the most important part, testing blood samples. Results are guaranteed within 4 hours.
Virus.
Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Guinea-Bissau.
Mariama, that's a great story there. So when you spoke to the Ebola Tsar, as you called him, and he talked about the fact that God really helped them, besides God, what did they say in terms of how they were able to really protect themselves, or at least to prevent the virus from coming there? Did they have anything at the border? Did they have any particular steps that they took?
Well, there is also another aspect of this, which is that it seems like every international organization that is fighting Ebola or is actually in Guinea-Bissau. And when I say that, it's like MSF is there, the Red Cross is there, CDC. So you have a lot of the international organizations who have actually taken it upon themselves to be there. For example, I talked about this mobile lab from from Portugal, which is major. You know why? Because Guinea-Bissau doesn't have what they call, like, for example, Senegal has the Institut Pasteur, where you can actually do blood samples. You can send blood samples and analyze them and determine if someone has Ebola or not. Mm-hmm. And they've had some kind of arrangement where Guinea-Bissau and Senegal, if someone was suspected, they will get the blood, send it to Senegal via road. That will take about 20 hours when they calculated it. They, for some reason, they couldn't fly it. That's another story. Mm-hmm. But nowadays, this operational lab brought in by basically the Portuguese is equipped with everything. And the one of the most important one was to be able to test the blood samples, and you can get results in 4 hours. Oh, wow. So it's the country, but also they've worked with other international organizations to really help them out, basically. Okay.
And Carol, Mariama basically spoke about the importance of infrastructure when it comes to Guinea-Bissau. First, did you want to react to what she said?
Yes, I did, because the same thing held true for this vaccine that they came out with. Mm-hmm. It was an international effort. The one that has been tried, I mean, the U.S. National Institute for Health has been working on a vaccine, the same vaccine it's been working in Liberia. The CDC, U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, have been working in Sierra Leone. And then the Norwegian government, the Norwegian Institute of Health, has been working in Guinea. But we have GlaxoSmithKline and yes. Merck, two huge pharmaceutical companies, mm-hmm. also collaborating and working with the scientists mm-hmm. so that they can bring an end to the epidemic, and governments have provided money so that they can pay the scientists, because everybody needs to get paid in order to do their work.
Yes.
So they've provided grants to fund all of this. So it was a truly internationally collaborative effort in bringing about not only preventing Ebola from breaking out in Guinea-Bissau, but mm-hmm. also coming up with this vaccine.
Now, what surprises me about the news about the vaccine is the fact that a lot of time when we hear about vaccine development, it takes a long time. It's a long process.
That's a great point, yes. Actually. And that's the same reaction I had. I mean, being from Africa, having grown up in Africa, and I just take malaria. I mean, mm-hmm. everyone yeah. has malaria. You have it a couple of times, several times, and there we don't have anything. It's taken generations,
exactly.
And nothing has worked so far. I mean,
yeah.
But for Ebola, I mean, within a few months, mm-hmm. we kind of, so that's a very good question.
Yes. What made the difference this time around?
All the regulating agencies realized how serious this was, and they fast-tracked it mm-hmm. so that they had scientists who were ready to take a look at the proposals. They got together with the World Health Organization, and they, last October, and they picked, I think it was 5 potential vaccines that they picked that they wanted to focus on, that they thought were the most promising. And so the, you know, Food and Drug Administration over here fast-tracked it so that they could do clinical trials in the U.S. The European equivalent fast-tracked it because there were clinical trials in Europe as well, just to prove that the vaccine did not do any harm to healthy people.
Mm-hmm.
You first have to know that it isn't going to make you sick. And it might need to be tweaked. And as a matter of fact, in one of the clinical trials, people complained about joint pain, so that they were able to figure out the right dose before they gave it to healthy volunteers in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
And I guess when you talk about fast tracking, I can understand how people will panic around this virus, given how, you know, it's the fact that it is contagious, but you know, the way it's being transmitted, even though it, you know, something like TB, it's easier to catch because it's in the, it's airborne, you know. Mm-hmm. But why, Mariama talked about malaria vaccine, for example. Why can they fast track other vaccines?
Well, maybe you know? this would actually be an example of just how serious it is and how many people have died in such a short time. And how devastating the economic consequences were for these countries that have gone, I call them, they've gone through hell and back. When you take mm-hmm. a country like Liberia or and Sierra Leone, and they were doing very well. They were, their economic growth, Sierra Leone was like the fourth, biggest, had the fastest economic growth in the few years. But mm-hmm. this Ebola outbreak has just put them back again, a decade basically a few decades back or like yes. a decade back.
Yes.
So
and
I'm just hoping.
Yeah, it all depends also yeah. on the actual disease. They've been looking for an HIV vaccine for
HIV,
years.
That's another one.
It's
another
a very, yeah. very difficult, I mean, virus
yes.
to come up with a vaccine for. But with Ebola, they already had an Ebola vaccine that was on the shelf for a couple of years. And it was I guess, Public Health Canada had it, and then it was licensed to a very small biotech firm, NewLink mm-hmm. Genetics. Mm-hmm. So this particular vaccine was already there. It hadn't been exactly tested, but it was showing promise. And then there were other vaccines that they tried in monkeys that seemed to stimulate some antibodies in these monkeys, but the funding wasn't there, and then you have this enormous outbreak.
Mm-hmm. Yes. You know, I think it's the urgency, I think, of the outbreak this time, maybe that just pushed it over the edge. It's
and,
like
but
we don't
they
have,
had
yeah.
they had the
something
beginning,
also.
So,
yes.
you know, yeah. so they had something
they had
to
something
work
to
with.
They didn't start from scratch.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
they
a
had
good
something
point.
To work with.
Absolutely.
That's interesting. So then, talking about this vaccine, okay, so it seems to be 100% effective, at least that's what the reports are saying. What next now?
Well, they could use this vaccine and follow, not the formula, but the approach to the vaccine. They want to find a way to protect against the Sudan variant, the Sudan Ebola virus, and there are two others. But they could also, now that they have the key, they could use this approach to protect against Marburg. Mm-hmm. They could use the approach to protect against Lassa fever, which is far more prevalent than Ebola or Marburg.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and
okay.
and so that's possible because they have found something that gives them something to work with. And okay. there's hope that funding will continue because Lassa fever is a horrible disease, and it is far more prevalent in West Africa or in Africa than Marburg or Ebola. I mean, you can remember the outbreaks of
yes,
Ebola
yes.
or Marburg, or mm-hmm. you know, whereas Lassa fever is just more prevalent.
Yeah. And what I was curious about was that the Merck vaccine was tried in Guinea and Liberia, but when I was in Senegal, for example, they were getting ready to try another vaccine that GSK, GlaxoSmithKline, was developing. So I think, I mean, if you have a few pharmaceutical companies developing different vaccines, maybe getting it better. Like, you know, a vaccine is not just like the answer, one answer and that's it. I think mm-hmm. they can also make it better as they go.
Yeah.
This is just the first trial, and yes, it's effective, but as they go, they will probably try to perfect it.
Well, one of the faults of the yeah. vaccine that's being done, that being used in Guinea, and they plan on keeping the trial in place mm-hmm. until they get to zero. So they're not going to end the study.
Okay.
Because otherwise they'd have to go through licensing procedures, and that mm-hmm. will take time. So the idea is that, you know, to help the most number of people, you put off the licensing until after this current epidemic is off, is over. But you can, One
of the things I was going to ask, I don't know if that's something that came up in your conversations with different, researchers. Is it a vaccine, the type of vaccine that will need a booster after a while?
That's why I talked about it, because like you have vaccines like, you know, Hep B, Hep A, you have meningitis, where you take those vaccines, it's for example, for 2 years. It's for 4 years. You take them once in a lifetime. So that's exactly what I was getting into.
Well, what they're planning with this vaccine, since Ebola is fairly rare, an outbreak, that what they're planning is to stockpile the vaccine and make it available should Ebola break out anywhere else. Okay. In Africa, because it's not going to be given like polio.
I was going to ask that. At what point does someone take the vaccine? So that's what you're
asking. Because of the expense. So, you know, and so it won't be given on a regular basis like that, but it will be stockpiled. Now, the Merck vaccine that is being used in Guinea, it requires a very cold temperature, and they've been able to deliver it so far. But it would be really nice if they could come up with a vaccine in countries that don't have regular electricity and you're going to rural areas, that could take some heat.
It's actually amazing you brought that up, because in Dakar, at the hospital, the Fan Hospital, I actually visited, and then they showed us basically where the vaccine is stored, and a certain number, the temperature has to be a certain number, exactly that number. It can't go up or down, otherwise it's going to affect it. And that was in the hospital and, you know, at the infectious diseases unit. So imagine if you're taking it into the rural areas, how do you refrigerate something like that and expect it?
Portable generator, I guess. I don't know.
You need electricity.
But they figured it out. They figured it out for the vaccine to be delivered in Guinea.
That's interesting. That's very interesting. And you mentioned Senegal. Quickly, I wanted you to touch on this. Now, Senegal had a little threat sometimes during this outbreak, but the country was able to really, really contain the outbreak. And can you give us a sense of what they were able to do that was so successful?
I think, like, I sat down with the health ministry, and I also talked to the head of the infectious diseases at the Fan Hospital, who actually was the one with his team, was the one who took care of the one case from Guinea that they had. And I think the general sense I had was just that everyone was involved. Like, when you get something as serious as this, and I'm going to quote the infectious diseases guy, because I asked him the question, do you think people are now, you know, we don't have Ebola, they've only had one case, and, you know, people don't really care as much. And he admitted, he said, you know what, you are actually right, because during Ebola, when you looked at my team and everyone who worked at the hospital, oh, wow, everyone was careful. They had to wash their hands. They're using gloves. They're using masks. They're doing everything. But now that we haven't had Ebola since that, even the people who work in the hospitals are not as careful.
They put their guards down.
A little bit down. But for the health ministry, what she told me was that also decentralizing a little bit the healthcare system or infrastructure or whatever. Because people tend to just concentrate on the cities. You know, it's a Dakar, it has 4 million people. Everything is, you think about it. But you have to think that if someone is coming from Guinea, it's not coming, Dakar is not the border.
Yeah.
It's all the way down there. Right. So instead of transporting a case from Ziguinchor, for example, to Dakar, you might as well put a hospital there, put a little bit of a team, train the ones who are already there so they can tackle something before you have to do the extra mile. You have to do the extra work.
Okay.
So that's a feeling I had.
And Carol, in your reporting, since this outbreak started, what did you come across in terms of some of the challenges that the people that were on the ground working on this issue, even international organizations, that they were coming across? Because a lot of time, Mariama mentioned earlier about infrastructure, you know, and even resources, financial resources. But what were some of the things that stood out in this crisis?
Every person I talked to has said that building trust was the biggest challenge.
Okay.
Because, you know, in certain areas, you just went with what you had. Mm-hmm. And they would be black body bags, which, you know, in Muslim countries, you have white. You get buried in white.
Absolutely.
The way they went in to get the bodies, they learned to ask the family, what would you like your loved one buried in? And have the family pick out the clothes. They would then dress the family, dress the person. But building trust for a vaccine even, that's one of the things they had to do. And they allowed Doctors Without Borders and other people on the ground who knew, who had already had the contacts from fighting this disease, to be able to go and explain everything. And I think that's the other thing, respect. You have to respect the other people. You have to respect, answer their questions, explain how does the vaccine work?
Mm-hmm.
How does treatment work? Instead of, they had to rename the treatment centers. They were, they named them treatment because otherwise people saw this as a place where their loved
ones
went.
You go to die.
Yeah.
Yes. Exactly.
And then they learned that you cut holes in it so people can see inside. They can see their loved ones.
Exactly.
Because there isn't any reason why they shouldn't be able to.
Yeah.
That's why I think also involving the community. You have to. It's just like, yeah, it's great to have all this aid. It's great to have people coming in from the West. But you have to involve the people who go through the day-to-day, who live there, who are going to be there when all the doctors are gone. They will be your eyes and ears that if they see someone and they suspect here and there, they can talk about it. Mm-hmm. But if you don't involve them from the beginning and you're just coming in and dictating certain things, it doesn't work.
It's very difficult. Yes. And we've seen also the fact that I think some of the things you mentioned kind of take me to the issue of cultural.
Absolutely.
We've seen how culture has played a role in even spreading this outbreak with the burial practices and everything. And also the importance that local leaders and culture.
Religious leaders, local leaders play a big role. And in Guinea-Bissau, I didn't mention them earlier, they played a huge role. Like really the head of the neighborhood, they call them, when you come in. I think it's a lady from the Red Cross who told me, she said, I was doing a quick thing on the border, and I arrived at a village, and the village head was looking at me a certain way. They were following me around, until they got used to knowing who we were and what we were doing.
Yeah.
So
Carol, what are the projections in terms of what this outbreak? I mean, I know you cannot really say, but in terms, as you spoke to so many experts and researchers on the field, do they have an idea now that there is a vaccine? Is there hope? Is there hope on the horizon to end this epidemic soon?
Oh, yes. And if you look at the numbers, they've been falling.
Yes.
And in fact, Liberia has not had a case.
Yeah.
Recently,
yeah.
And they've been falling in both Guinea and Sierra Leone.
Mm-hmm.
They expect the outbreak, and they always give you conservative estimates, but they expect the outbreak to be over with in a few months.
Mm, okay. Okay, that's some good news. Some good news, Mariana.
It is.
But great news. But for me, I think just learning from this experience and moving forward, I think not just the countries, but maybe the whole world should start thinking about any of these third world countries and start investing in their health system, because you don't wait until you have an outbreak and you don't have the capabilities to handle the outbreak. And then you're pouring all this money and you're pouring all these capacities for those countries. Try to do it before. Like, try to change health infrastructure, which is major. And a lot of people are not talking about it, but that is key.
Health system is key.
One of the things that they have been talking about it. Mm-hmm. They have been talking about having hospitals with reliable sanitation, with reliable electricity. And after this outbreak, they sorely need doctors, because those countries had fragile healthcare systems to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
They need doctors.
Absolutely. Yes. And so a lot of training.
A lot of training, and we all agree. Mariama Diallo, Carol Pearson, thank you so much for joining us today. And we enjoy your reporting and keep covering these stories out there. I'm your host, Linor Mudu in Washington. To continue the conversation, join us on facebook.com/VOA Health Chat. And thank you for joining us. With producer Jackson Bungani. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.